It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
If the Supreme Court decides to take up the case, a high-profile U.S. senator will be arguing in front of the high court. Texas Senator Ted Cruz telling Fox News exclusively, quote, petitioner's legal team has asked me whether I would be willing to argue the case before the Supreme Court if the court grants certiorari. I have agreed and told them that if the court takes the appeal, I will stand ready to present the oral argument. The case being brought by Republican Congressman Mike Kelly and congressional candidate Sean Parnell. They argue no excuse, mail-in voting is unconstitutional, so they're seeking to throw out those ballots in this presidential election. Cruz has publicly pushed for the high court to take up the case, and the senator tells Fox News, as I said last week, the bitter division and acrimony we see across the nation needs resolution. I believe the Supreme Court has a responsibility to the American people to ensure within its powers that we are following the law and following the Constitution. This would not be a new experience for Senator Cruz. He served as Solicitor General for the state of Texas from 2003 to 2008. He has made 9 appearances before the Supreme Court. This could be the 10th.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That's big news because we know how powerful Ted Cruz can be in his arguments. And so he is now urging the Supreme Court, and he's been asked to be the one that brings the suit. Now, another interesting thing about that is that Andy McCarthy, who is, look, Andy's a friend of mine. I have tremendous respect for Andy, but I've totally disagreed with his coverage of these election challenges. But even Andy this morning said this case is strong, and he believes the Supreme Court should listen to it. So I just telling you that's probably some interesting news this morning. And just in my inbox, just before, as the music was playing, this is what I got. Texas, just last night, the state of Texas, speaking of Ted Cruz, filed a lawsuit directly with the U.S. Supreme Court shortly before midnight, challenging the election procedures in Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin on the grounds that they violate the Constitution. Now, I have a longer piece here. Hang on a second, because I haven't had a chance to read it. Texas argues that these states violated the Electors Clause of the Constitution because they made changes to voting rules and procedures through the courts or through executive actions, but not through the state legislatures. Additionally, Texas argues that there were differences in voting rules and procedures in different counties within the states, violating the Constitution's Equal Protection Clause. Finally, Texas argues that there were voting irregularities in these states as a result of the above. And Texas is asking the Supreme Court to order the states to allow their legislatures to appoint their electors. Now, there's more to this, and I will read it later, but I just wanted to give you, that's hot off the press. The press. Last night, just before midnight in Texas. That's a big story. Now, I'm going to give you a rundown, as I have been doing. Look, here's the way I see this. There's a ton of movement. And as I said to you from the very beginning, there is plenty of reason to overturn what they're claiming are the results of this election. There are facts, and there's evidence, and there's testimony, and there are affidavits, people willing to, you know, sign something that puts their lives in legal jeopardy, going before these, sometimes in the halls of their state capitals, and sometimes not. Sometimes in local hotels because the leaders in that particular legislature won't allow it in the Capitol. But people have been pouring their hearts out. I mean, we're talking about thousands of people here who have seen stuff that is just really unbelievable. And I think I would also say that, and according to what I have read, even a pretty good, I wish I had the stat, sorry, heard this in passing, that Democrats are even believing, at least a certain percentage of them, a significant percentage, I think it was 30-something percent, that this is not, something happened in this election, that some fraud has happened. And so we have to get to the bottom of this. And Ted Cruz, by the way, his appeal to the Supreme Court is, look, there is confusion, there's division. You're going to have to face this. You're going to have to take this on and make some decisions. So we'll see if Ted can actually... I told you yesterday, Judge Alito, I said he was from Pennsylvania. He's not. He's from New Jersey, the neighboring state. But he's actually pushing this ahead, asking for people who are involved in this case to file. I believe it was by this morning he asked for a filing to be submitted. And then there's some other procedure that's going to happen on Thursday. So we'll see. I think the thing is moving. And there are other states, too, that I'm going to get to in a second, I hope. But I want to also say this to you. We have to be realistic about what we're hearing. If the right thing were done, this election would be overturned. But do not think that the forces in place, the powers that hold the levers, are going to let this thing go down without a fight. Look what they did during the election. Look what they did in the last, years of President Trump's presidency. There's nothing they won't do. There's nothing illegal they won't perpetrate. Just this morning, I got... I don't have this in my hand, but there is a legal entity asking for all lawyers who are part of the bar to come after and disbar and discipline all of the attorneys who have been working in these various states and at the federal level. They feature a picture of Sidney Powell right on the front. We're going to come after them, basically, is the way it says. And they want you to sign this letter, and we're going to come after them, discipline them, maybe disbar them, which would take away their ability to even support themselves, which reminds me that in a few minutes we're going to be talking about a story that's completely different. But it's about someone who had all of their privileges and rights stripped from them and is now destitute. And I want to tell you that story in just a second. But let's go back to the election first. In Georgia, there has been an organization has decided that, there's no, in that video that we saw of those suitcases of ballots under the tables, and the fact that observers, Republican observers primarily, were told to leave, all of that's just not true. That's what we've been told, that it's not true. And you've probably heard it too. The Washington Post repeated it, Newsweek repeated it. But on its further investigation, Molly Hemingway has written a very extensive article in The Federalist. So, no, the Georgia vote counting video was not debunked, not even close. And she says big tech fact-backed fact-checking outfit claimed to debunk explosive evidence in support of Republicans' claims of significant election problems at a Thursday Georgia Senate hearing. It didn't. Not even close. I don't have time to go into all of this, but we're going to put this article on our Facebook page. But let me just say that the organization doing the fact-check, it's called Lead Stories. It has it put on there, on the video, a hoax alert. And behind all of this, Molly goes through all the major entities like ABC News, and I believe CNN, all report, NBC it was, ABC and NBC reported that poll workers were told to leave because they were going to stop counting. So there's tons of evidence that this actually did happen. There are people in the room who described the woman who said told them to leave, that they were going to stop counting for the next 3 hours. And so Molly goes through all of this. And then she ends it by saying that this Lead Stories, which is the entity that claimed that this was a hoax, the piece was originally written by Alan Duke and Hallie Golden. Golden is a freelance writer for The Guardian, which of course is a left-wing publication, and Alan Duke is a CNN entertainment reporter who retired from that outlet after 26 years. She also says that Lead Stories, which is the entity that I believe they're the ones that the story was written by those guys. The Lead Stories is capital S Stories, is a Beijing-based China Communist Party-linked company known for TikTok, Facebook, and Google, have suppressed journalism deemed harmful to Trump's 2020 election opponent, Joe Biden. So I just want you to know, Molly's article we'll put again on our Facebook page so that you can read that. And if you can't find it on my Facebook page, because, you know, there's only 22,000 of you ever looking at my Facebook page for the last 10 years, or almost 10 years. It's a shocking thing that we have such a small audience, according to Facebook. I wish, they only wish. But so you might not get it, and it's called No, the Georgia Vote Counting Video Was Not Debunked. So you can find that on The Federalist by Molly Hemingway. All right, so there you go. That's Georgia. Then there are other things I want to tell you. Where am I with time? I want to tell you this important thing. Every legal vote is having a special summit this afternoon, Election Fraud Summit. It's at 4 o'clock. It's going to be on the Economic War Room. That's hosted by our friend Kevin Freeman. And that's at Blaze TV. So you'll have to check how you can get Blaze TV. I don't know how to tell you to do that quickly. So, but Joe DeGeneva, Joe Schmitz, who's the Inspector General of the United States Department of Defense, will be there. Also, Lieutenant Colonel Phil Waldron. He is the former Lieutenant Colonel who's a cybersecurity expert who testified in Michigan, I believe it was. He's the one who reported that 35,000 votes were added to each candidate in Michigan. So that's going to happen today at 4 o'clock, and I wanted you to know that because I thought you might want to know. EveryLegalVote.com is a great place to go for just election information all the time. And also it provides a way for you to contact your congressman, your local and federal. It'll tell you more when you go to EveryLegalVote.com. All right, so Pennsylvania, we talked about that. Nevada. The judge that had agreed to hear their case dismissed it and said that there was not enough evidence. Well, the Republican Party showed tons of 20 binders filled with evidence and pushed back and said, that's ridiculous. We appreciate the consideration of the evidence, but we disagree. We have 20 binders of evidence on this thing. And so they are appealing to a higher court. And then in Michigan, the Trump campaign has asked the Michigan Supreme Court to declare that the election process violated the state constitution. And then last but not least, in Arizona yesterday, in several state legislatures, some of whom I knew, Kelly met and had a press conference. There was also a Stop the Steal rally. Kelly Ward, who is the Republican chairman of Arizona, had this to say. Let's listen. I haven't heard this myself, so let's listen to Kelly Ward.
Katie Hobbs says that we are casting doubt on the integrity of our elections. We demand integrity in our elections. And if there are questions, people like Katie Hobbs and Adrian Fontes should be opening the doors, they should make it more transparent. They should make it easier for us to see rather than making it more secret.
Well, I'm just trying to support the group because it's obvious that this election is being stolen. And if you don't stand up for something, you're going to lose what you have. And somebody out there has to know that there's a lot of unhappy people here. We're not going to stand for it.
All right, that's Arizona. And then in Wisconsin, I'm going to bring you more about Wisconsin later, but let me just say I had a very long conversation yesterday with the chairman of Waukesha County, which is the largest county in Wisconsin. And Wisconsin has been kind of our silent partner, I would just say, in the sense that there's been a lot of alleged voter fraud in Wisconsin, and yet we haven't heard much from them. And so what's happened is the people that have been trying to fight for voter integrity there, who would be people that support what we're trying to do here, have waited for the Supreme Court to make their decision. There are a lot of reasons for that. The Supreme Court made their decision just a couple of days ago, and it was a bad decision. And so the members of Wisconsin's legislature now are taking things into their own hands. It's an uphill battle for them because, like other legislatures, they can call a special session, but I think they have to have 60% of members of the legislature to agree to that. So you can see that that's a heavy lift, and but that's not impossible. And so that's what's happening in Wisconsin. Heaven knows, they've got tons of ballot fraud that you'll be hearing about. All right, coming up next, an incredible story of someone who needs our help I want you to hear this story, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
What would it be like if every person knew that they were created in the image of God?
After 2 years in the making, American Family Studios proudly presents In His Image, delighting in God's plan for gender and sexuality.
There are only two sexes, male or female. If you're conceived with a Y chromosome, you will develop into a male.
In His Image is a documentary featuring life-changing testimonies of former LGBT individuals.
In my most formative years of development of sexuality, I went through a brutal time of sexual distortion, molestation.
Visit inhisimage.movie to watch In His Image.
Well, everybody, welcome to this unboxing video as we unbox my hormone blockers.
In His Image from American Family Studios is available now for free viewing. Visit inhisimage.movie.
You're made in the image of God.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for John Rachalski, Assistant Secretary for Management and Chief Financial Officer of the Department of Veterans Affairs. He's responsible for directing the department's budgetary, financial, capital asset management, and business oversight functions. Titus 2:7 reminds us of the importance of being a good steward. Show yourself in all respects to be a model of good works, and in your teaching show integrity, dignity. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for John Rachalski. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team. Create a heartfelt holiday message to send to the President and his family. It's a special Christmas greeting from your family to the First Family. It's free at pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
When it comes to choosing a college, campus visits are important, but 2020 has made it tough to tour your top picks. At Liberty University, we understand, so we offer a variety of visiting opportunities. Tour campus from home with a virtual tour, or visit campus for a few hours for a daily campus tour. Dig a little deeper with Experience LU, a single-day event where you'll tour campus, meet with faculty and staff, and sample on-campus dining locations. Pick your perfect visit by texting VISIT to 49596. Again, that's VISIT to 49596.
10 months ago, the so-called medical experts told us if we quarantine inside our homes for 2 weeks, we would lower the curve and stop the virus. That's what they told us 10 months ago. Then they told us we ought to stay at home for another 2 weeks, and then another. And now here we are 10 months later. Many Americans unemployed, small business owners on the verge of bankruptcy, and there's no end in sight. But I contend something else is going on here. The Democrats warn us about the severity of the virus. They tell us unless we socially distance and wear a mask, millions will die. And yet there is growing evidence the Democrats responsible for shutting down our businesses are disregarding their own orders, eating inside restaurants without face coverings, taking vacations during the holidays. Why would they do that? Unless, of course, the virus is not as deadly as they've been telling us. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. I just told you a few minutes ago that as of midnight last night, state of Texas has filed a suit at the Supreme Court suing Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin over election rules. I won't go into the details now. By the way, Breitbart has a story about that up right now. And so it's just up. This all happened in the last, 12 hours or 10, whatever many hours that is, 8 hours from midnight last night. And other states will probably be joining this lawsuit soon. So this is a very big deal, and I wanted to tell you about that. By the way, the March for Trump bus tour is passing through the country. And if you would like to go, it was in Wisconsin yesterday, could still be there for all I know. If you go to TrumpMarch.com, it will tell you where these where the bus is going, and it will end up in D.C., Washington, D.C., on Saturday, where there will be a massive march for Trump. And I told you that my husband and I will be there, and so I hope that you'll come and join us. And let's see, the thing of it is, I told you earlier that we have the evidence to change the results of this election. But what we don't have is political will, and that's really what it's going to take, whether it's from judges, because, yes, they are political, or if it's state legislatures or even the United States Congress, which it may end up in their lap, and even the Supreme Court justices, and you know that they are political as well. So they really need to see the people out in the streets saying, this is not going to work. We are not going to settle for this. And so that's why you know to need to go to TrumpMarch.com and see if there's some way that you can intersect with this and if you can come. All right, this is an incredible story. And let me just say that this actually was printed in Newsweek not long ago, and I'm going to read a little bit of it to you. This is what it sounds like. Last month in a small town in West Virginia, a 74-year-old husband and his invalid wife were hospitalized for several days after eating rotten food the husband fished out of the dumpster. For the past decade and a half, former Pentagon intelligence analyst and operative Colonel, retired, Lawrence Larry Franklin, and his wife Patricia have lived in utter destitution. During his 35 years of service, Colonel Franklin was celebrated as a brilliant, fearless intelligence officer by his colleagues and bosses at the Defense Intelligence Agency, in the U.S. Air Force, and in the Office of the Secretary of Defense. Now, the aging hero who saved countless U.S. servicemen lives in war zones is a broken man. Colonel Franklin subsists on the meager wages he earns from washing dishes, cleaning septic tanks, and parking cars, while also taking care of his invalid wife. Colonel Franklin's fall from grace is a tale that cries out for justice. That's just the opening paragraph. The details are stunning. And I've asked this morning an attorney who has taken this case on pro bono because he heard about it. And I'll tell you, I'll let you tell you how he heard about this. Alan. Oh, very interesting. I got myself mixed up. I introduced the wrong thing. William Jacobson is our, from Legal Insurrection, is our guest this morning. William, will you please forgive me? I got my interviews mixed up.
Yeah, you got me worried there for a second.
Could you talk about Larry Franklin? I don't mean to throw you a curve, but oh, gosh. Okay, Bill. Listen, I appreciate you joining me. Your story is no less incredible because you are talking about, and I'm sorry, now I don't have the story in front of me, but you're talking about a professor who has been attacked and is being savaged by students, I believe, at Harvard, right?
Yes, it's a Harvard Law School professor, Adrian Vermeule, who is very well known, very prominent. I'm not sure how you would classify him politically, but he's definitely not a liberal, okay? I think most people would call him conservative. He's a little bit of an iconoclast, meaning he kind of ruffles a lot of feathers everywhere. But he's very prominent, very much associated with Catholicism. And he has certain views on church and state that are not the prevailing views, let's put it that way. He thinks that, you know, church should be more involved, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to oversimplify his views, but he's pretty prominent. I mean, he's been there for, I think it's 20-plus years. He's written 9 books. He writes for the popular press. He had a big article in The Atlantic last spring about the whole church-state thing and liberalism, and his views are not mainstream, but he is very prominent. And he also has a Twitter account that I follow, and that's really mostly the way I know of him is through his Twitter account. And he's very funny, he's very sarcastic, and he, again, ruffles the right feathers. And so what happened is 4 student groups got together, and they sent a they basically went over his Twitter history and compiled a 42-page, call it a dossier, call it whatever you want, of all these tweets of his that they considered offensive. And they have gone to the school administration demanding that he be disciplined for this, that he not be allowed to teach first-year students, that he be stripped of various responsibilities, that he be denounced by the law school, et cetera. And so we got a hold of a copy of that complaint and wrote about it and wrote about how it's so typical of what has been going on, particularly in the last 6 to 8 months, but for many years, where there's an attempt to homogenize opinion on campuses. And when you read the student complaint, it's, in one sense, it's laughable. I mean, the guy was legitimately funny on Twitter about stuff. But because he was poking fun at the things they consider to be important, they took great offense to it and say it makes them unsafe, feel unsafe. And so one of the things that I'm still laughing about is when the story broke that Amy Coney Barrett, I don't know, 20 years ago or something like that, had signed on to a petition called saying that, you know, abortion providers should be prosecuted or something like that. That's probably a distortion. But that was like breaking news on Twitter back, you know, when she was nominated. And so his response is on Twitter, and I don't see a problem here. That was his response. That's the sort of stuff that they take offense
to. He just said, I don't see a problem here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
And that's one of the things that they took offense to. And other but similar things. So their big point, like half their letter or a third of their letter, is devoted to him supposedly spreading election misinformation, okay, and how destructive that is to democracy and to the law school's reputation. Of course, this is the same law school where one of their emeritus professors is Lawrence Tribe, who was the biggest Russia collusion conspiracy nut on all of Twitter, or one of them, and nobody complained, nobody tried to get him fired. So the election misinformation was him making jokes like, you know, for one of the ballot dumps that this is approaching Soviet-style, you know, election results or something like that, because it was like 97% for, you know, for Biden in some election dump. So he jokes about those sort of things. Of course, in you know, jest there is truth. I mean, there's points being made by him mocking these things. You know, another tweet they took great offense to was him saying that, you know, even the Soviets were smart enough to, you know, not have such outrageous results or something like that. And so this is the sort of nonsense that goes on, but it's very sinister in a sense, because what it's trying to do is, I assume nothing will happen to him. The school wouldn't comment or didn't comment, didn't respond to my inquiries. But, you know, it sends a message to all the other people out there that if you step out of line even a little bit, you could have severe career consequences. And that's really what's going on here.
Yeah, let me ask you something, because we've had this kind of conversation before, and certainly this story has become like ho-hum. This is happening all over the place to professors who dare to express their view, but a lot of them are not so lucky as to not be let go. You actually think he's safe at Harvard? And why do you have to speak with confidence about that?
Well, first of all, there's no legitimate substance to this, okay? There's no legitimacy to the complaints they make. Two, he is a very prominent professor there. I assume he has tenure, so he has some sort of protection within the university. So I would assume that nothing is going to happen to him. I mean, could be surprised. But it's something he needs to take seriously whenever this sort of thing happens. But so I don't think anything is likely to happen to him. But even if it doesn't, the damage is done. I mean, the damage is done because now a message has been sent to him that he's being monitored, that they are going to go after him. And that message, of course, also goes to other professors, maybe ones who don't have tenure, who now understand you can't even joke about something that is not a strictly left-wing liberal agenda item. And so, you know, you can't even joke about Amy Coney Barrett. You can't even joke about election results. You can't have a sense of humor. If you have a sense of humor, that's now an offense at Harvard Law School. So yeah. I think that it's really a dangerous situation.
It is dangerous, and the irony is, it does remind me of the old Soviet days, Bill, because I remember, hiding under my desk when the Soviets were supposedly going to drop their bombs. We remember the tension during the missiles in Cuba. Remember all of that, but I also remember hearing about what they were teaching kids in Soviet schools and how absurd, how absurd some of the things we're teaching, like that Russians invented everything, including the car and the refrigerator and all of these things. And we thought, how could that ever be? And we did find humor in that. And yet now here we are. Or you think of 1984 and all the ridiculous things that Winston describes that are happening in that, wherever that was. This is kind of the nature of the left. They do bizarre things, and you're supposed to believe that it's actually true. That's what scares me, Bill. It's just, it is funny. It's hilarious. I said yesterday on the air, we need to make fun of them more, because it's just insanity. And for their sake, we need to make fun of them, if not for our own. But this is a strain of totalitarianism and totalitarian thought that really frightens me.
Right. I mean, they're entitled to criticize him, okay? And if they had sent tweets out mocking him, that would be fine. If they had written an op-ed in the newspaper, you know, criticizing him, that would be fine. But that's not what they're doing. They're going after his job. They're trying to damage him professionally. They're trying to damage him within the law school. They're not calling for him to be fired. I mean, they're not that stupid. But they want him humiliated. They want him removed from teaching first-year students. He teaches administrative law. That's his area of expertise and fame, or one of his areas. They want a second administrative law course added to the calendar for students who do not feel comfortable being in his classroom. And this is the sort of stuff that is pure humiliation. It's what took place in the Chinese Cultural Revolution, where professors who had wrong things would be paraded in front of jeering crowds for humiliation purposes. And that's what they want to do to him. It's really, while they're not calling for him to be fired, they do want him humiliated. And that's similar. I know I've told the story to you, what happened to me at Cornell Law School, which is when I criticized the Black Lives Matter movement. They tried to do a similar thing. They didn't demand I be fired. At least the students did it. Alumni did demand it. But students did it, and, you know, some students turned over to me some of their internal correspondence, and they decided strategically not to call for me to be fired because they thought that might make them look bad, okay? So it wasn't that they didn't want me fired, and I assume that's what happened at Harvard. They knew that they really would maybe lose some supporters if they called for them to be fired. So they call for denunciations. You shall be a pariah at your respective school. And that's what's going on. And I think it's horrible, and it's really almost unbelievable. I mean, you talk about the Soviet Union. I actually studied in the Soviet Union during the Cold War. I mean, I was a Russian studies major. I lived in Moscow. And a lot of the things that they were taught were just unbelievable. I remember having a conversation with someone. I think the person was from Eastern Europe, the Eastern Bloc. There were a lot of Eastern students at my Eastern Bloc students at where I was studying. And I remember the person telling me just casually how South Korea had invaded North Korea, and that's what started the Korean War. And I said, no, that's not true. She said, absolutely, it is. And I said, you know, and because that's what they'd been taught, that the capitalists invaded North Korea, and that's what started the war. I said, well, okay, explain this to me. How is it that if the South invaded the North in the opening couple of days of the war, the North captured Seoul, okay, the city of Seoul? I mean, how could that be if the South attacked? And she kind of looked at me and said, well, I'll have to look into it. But that's what they're taught, and they grow up believing it. And that's what we have a generation who has been raised to believe that the United States is the main problem in the world. Capitalism is the main problem in the world. And unlike the rest of the world, we are systemically racist and systemically bad. And that the only offenses of colonialism and conquest that have ever taken place in history were by, you know, European colonialists. Of course, the history of the world, including the non-white world, is one of, you know, conquest and possession and occupation. I mean, go back, you know, thousands of years. I mean, that's what has happened. But they are taught this narrative that is something unique to white European capitalism, all of these sins. When in fact, it's not unique. It's actually common to all of mankind.
Well, and the mark of it being propaganda is that, as you said, when you try to push back, they have no—they just know talking points. They know data points, but they cannot make an argument because what they're saying is just not true. By the way, the article is called Student Cancel Mob Comes for Harvard Law Professor Adrian Vermeule Over Tweets Mocking Leftists. It's a great article and includes his funny tweets. So, Legal Insurrection, William Jacobson. Bill, thanks so much for joining us this morning. I so appreciate it. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
I'm Francine Perry. I am the mother of Laura Perry, who was a prodigal for 9 years. And I would just like to tell you that prayer changes things. Yes, you grieve over the prodigal, but God will comfort you. The Holy Spirit will comfort you.
Submit a prayer request for a prodigal at inhisimage.movie/prayer.
My heart's desire is that more churches would start a prodigal box because we all have someone.
inhisimage.movie/prayer.
AFR programming is now available on Alexa.
You're joking, right?
Nope, not joking.
Seriously?
Yep, this is not a drill.
Wait a minute. No way.
There's a way. The Alexa way. So if you just happen to miss your favorite shows, no worries. You can now listen to each podcast with Alexa. It's simple and it's free. Just visit afr.net/apps and click Alexa. We're not joking.
Forever, O Lord, your word is firmly fixed in the heavens. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The American Republic was founded on the principle that rights are given to us by God, not men. As a result, men nor government can take them away. That's why our Declaration of Independence refers to our rights as inalienable rights. Government's role, then, is to protect the rights that God has given to us. The first freedom listed in the Bill of Rights, which government is entrusted to protect, is religious liberty. The founders did this because they knew that free exercise of religion is the fulcrum for all liberty. Wherever the flame of religious liberty is extinguished, all liberty is imperiled.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with the Life and Liberty Minute. There's a manic effort by regressives to demand America recognize Joe Biden as president-elect. Chris Wallace, the regressive who anchors Fox on Sunday morning, faced off Sunday with Alex Azar, the Health and Human Services Secretary of the United States. When Azar referred to Vice President Biden, Wallace rudely interrupted him twice to insist Biden is the president-elect. Azar ignored him. So Wallace interrupted him a third time in less than a minute for the same obsessive purpose. What Wallace doesn't grasp is it's impossible for Biden to be president-elect until December 14, when the Electoral College meets. Until then, I have just as many electoral votes as Mr. Biden. Let's hope Mr. Wallace gets a remedial seminar in the Constitution and election law real soon.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Last night, Tucker Carlson broke the code on a mortal threat, the Chinese Communist Party's use of, quote, old friends, unquote, on Wall Street and Washington to bend America to its will. A Chinese professor named Di Dongsheng told a domestic audience how the CCP has corrupted America's political and business elites. Notably, he euphemistically disclosed that there were, quote, buy and sell transactions involved, unquote, with Joe Biden's son, Hunter. D specifically exposed the role that American financiers have willingly played to promote China's interests at our nation's expense. For being one of Beijing's bankers and most aggressive agents of influence, Goldman Sachs will be rewarded massively today by getting full control of a Chinese subsidiary. But as Professor D noted, President Trump is not under Wall Street's control and is telling it to stop underwriting maligned CCP companies. The president's right, and our corrupt elites are dead wrong. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. I'm sorry about that mistake. That's the first time that's ever happened to me where I prepped for a different interview than I actually had. So, see, the thing is, here's my excuse. I booked a lot of shows yesterday. I do book my own shows. And so our guest, Alan Lowry, will be our guest tomorrow. And I've been booking a lot of other things, too. So I've got like a million, I've got a million shows in my head. And I'm ready for all of them at a given moment. So anyway, that was really kind of embarrassing. But that's what happened. All right. So I want to tell you that this is Christmas. Did you know? Did you remember? And by the way, Adam, we are not playing our Christmas bumpers. And we should be doing that. Because it's Christmas, it's December, so let's make sure we do that tomorrow. All right, so AFA Christmas buttons this year say, Jesus, our living hope, Merry Christmas. And they're beautiful, and we make them available every Christmas season. It's just a kind of a nice way of drawing a line in the sand and saying, hey, Christmas, it is Christmas. Remember when we couldn't hardly say that? That changed after Donald Trump came in, you know that. He had a thing about that. God bless him for having a thing about that. He was just fed up with the politically correct left telling us we could not talk about Christmas, couldn't say it in the stores. And so that changed because Donald Trump said it constantly. Remember? Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. He said, we're going to change that. Well, AFA had been pushing against that with our Christmas buttons and also just encouraging people to just speak about Christmas and not give that up. And we want to continue because heaven knows what the future holds. And by the way, it says, Jesus, our living hope, Merry Christmas. It's a new design for 2020, and so if you would like to buy some, they come in packs of 10, and they're designed to wear and share, and you can order in sets of 10. And remember, of course, the more you buy, the more you save. They're available at the AFA store. That's afastore.net, afastore.net, or you can call and order them at 877-927-4917. That's 877-927-4917. And speaking of Christmas, you know, Wisconsin has a very liberal governor, Tony Evers. He beat Scott Walter by a thin margin, but he beat him. And so Wisconsin has kind of been straining under the leftist bent of their governor. And so one of the things that he decided that was that there would be no holiday tree in the rotunda at the Capitol this year. But a couple of local reps sort of saw that differently, Representative Sortwell and Representative Paul Titi, and they made a little video. I just want you to listen to it because it's just kind of fun. Let's listen.
Hi, I'm State Representative Chuck Wickers, and I'd like to profoundly thank Representatives Paul Tittle and Chase Sortwell for bringing a Christmas tree to the Capitol.
Merry Christmas to everyone throughout Wisconsin, and I'd also like to thank Representatives Tittle and Sortwell for bringing in the tree. It was the pleasure of Representative Wickers and I to help decorate it this afternoon.
We really wanted to have a Christmas tree in the Capitol. The governor said no, but we decided we were going to put one up anyhow. So, Shay, how are we going to decorate this?
You know what? It's been a long tradition here in the state capitol to have the children around the state make decorations to put on our Christmas tree. So we would think we would continue that long-standing tradition and ask the members, the children from our districts, or even around the state, if you are able and willing to do so, make a decoration. Send it to Representative Paul Tittle, send it to myself. We'll be sure to put our contact information, our mailing address in the video. And we hope that this will bring a little bit of joy and a little bit of Christmas spirit to your lives in this time, this difficult time. That we remember there is hope and there is joy and there is peace, remembering the birth of our Savior.
Isn't that sweet? I mean, I thought it was really cute, actually. And these guys are trying to decorate the tree. It's kind of fun to watch them do that. But it's a beautiful tree, and so there is a tree in the rotunda of the Wisconsin State Capitol because of these guys, Representative Paul Tittle and Representative Sortwell, and I think a couple of others there. So I wanted you to hear that because that's like Christmas spirit for sure, and that's the thing that we can do to kind of counter the left. And we've talked about humor. This is funny. You want to hear something funny? Remember when, okay, let's go back. Let's see, what when was this? This was, I don't remember when this first happened, but I do remember it, and that is when Goya Foods, the CEO and founder of Goya Foods, I think his name is Bob Ananu, and Bob is a Mexican-American, I think, you know, second generation, I'm not sure how many generations, maybe first generation. And so he had basically praised President Trump. He said the United States was blessed to have a leader like President Trump. This is probably 6 months ago. Well, Housing and Urban Development Director Julian Castro and Ocasio-Cortez and others jumped all over him. You know, boycott Goya Foods. We're not going to buy. How could he do this? This is horrible. So what happened as a result of that? Well, what happened was Ananu told Michael Berry that his sales spiked 1,000% after Ocasio-Cortez supported calls for a boycott to Goya Foods. This was in July, and now I just see this. It was in mid-July. So his sales spiked 1,000%. So as a result of that, he is now named Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez Employee of the Month. I think that's really funny. I actually have a bunch of Goya food in my pantry because I went shopping, and maybe you did too. And we helped them. We kind of made a statement. See, this is the thing. We, that regular Americans, those of us that love the Constitution in our country, we have a lot more power than we recognize. And I would also say this. This is more important than that even. Those of us that are Christians certainly have a lot more power than that. That doesn't mean power to get our way. I am not saying that. Our God, the God we serve is not a rabbit's foot. He doesn't just follow our whims and wishes. We follow his. but he has, he's omnipotent. We shouldn't be so afraid. It's amazing to me how frightened we get, like whether it's COVID or even sometimes my worry too. I worry more than I'm afraid. I don't know. I just worry about everything, about the way things are going. I grieve about it. But I forget how great God is and how he has promised that he will never leave us or forsake us, and he will provide whatever we need in whatever moment we find ourselves. So individually, we should just not be afraid. And we should enjoy the fact that in many ways, it's not our bodies that we should be worried about being hurt. It's our souls. And if everything's right with Jesus, then you don't have to fear. So anyway, and we can have a sense of humor about what we see happening around us because it really is unhinged. I want to tell you I'm going to tell you several different not connected stories in the time that I have left here. The U.S. Supreme Court has refused to question school district policies that let transgender students use bathrooms aligned with their gender identity, rejecting an appeal from parents who said the privacy rights of other students are being violated. The justices, without comment, left intact a federal appeals court decision that threw out a lawsuit against Dallas School District No. 2 in Western Oregon. Now, this is not in Dallas. It's in Western Oregon. It's just Dallas, Oregon. They threw that case out. The case centered on a transgender student who was allowed to use the boys' bathroom and locker room at Dallas High School until he graduated in 2018. In their appeal, three parents and two parent organization said the school district's policy violated the Constitution and a federal statute that guards against discrimination in education. The school district told the justice the case had become moot. Restroom use by transgender people has been a lurking issue at the Supreme Court. In 2016, the court agreed to hear an appeal from a Virginia school board that sought to bar a high school student from using the boys' bathroom. The justices dropped that case after President Donald Trump took office. Did you catch that? That's another big thing the president did. And his education department revoked the Obama order, which was forcing every school district to open their bathrooms to either gender or they would lose funding. That's why that happened. If you wonder why it happened, it's because of President Barack Obama and Vice President Joe Biden, who said the day that he said the first thing he's going to do is open up bathrooms to all genders. And he's going to reverse the President Trump's intervention at the Pentagon to prevent transgender people from serving in the military. So that's something to look forward to, isn't it? I say that tongue in cheek, if I have to add that. So the Supreme Court now has refused to hear this case. So they're inevitably going to have to hear a case about this. And so, but that's what happened. That's what happened. By the way, I want to do a whole show on this, but just in case you have not seen this, and how could you have, because of all the other news on the election, it's kind of swallowing things up. Great Britain has decided that it is not, that they will not allow, I need to be careful because I want to make sure I get the details right, that children should not be given hormone blockers. That's the basis of this. I'm sure there are some restrictions on that ruling, but in some form or fashion, children are not going to be given hormone blockers as they have. And it's a great ruling, or great ruling in Great Britain. And I want to do a whole show on that. And so we'll revisit that issue. And by the way, let me just say that that reminds me of our great new movie, inhisimage.movie. If you haven't seen it, you need to watch that movie. You need to share it with your church. You need to share it with your friends. It's a powerful video about God's design for male and female. Things that probably you have never thought of either. Things that you probably assumed you knew or understood because you're not confused about your personal gender, but things that will equip you to deal with your family, your friends, your grandchildren, people, you know, people all over the place. Oh, I am. Because what they're learning in public schools is just horrendous. We just talked to Bill Jacobson about what's happening at Harvard, and he was talking about what kids are learning in school, which reminds me of something that happened just a few days ago. I think I have this clip on here. In Oregon, they were doing a rally against the shutdowns because small businesses are hurting, and we're actually going to be talking about that later this week. And because small businesses are hurting, it was in Bend, Oregon, that a group of people decided that they wanted to protest the shutdowns because they're so draconian in so many of the states. Many of you are listening from Oregon, and you know what I'm talking about. So a teacher shows up in her little car, and she has some words for the family and people that are demonstrating, trying to get businesses, small businesses, to open up. And this is who's teaching your children, by the way. She drives by in her little car and stops. And she tells them what she thinks. Let's listen. Clip 10. Well, so as she's talking, she's leaning out of the car and, you know, using her special finger to express her viewpoint. And the reason it's bleeped so much is because her language is so vulgar. And she says basically something, be, kill yourself, go kill yourself. It's just lovely. It's a lovely little oration from a teacher. She's teaching your children. And if you think that's unusual, I know a lot of teachers are listening to this program. I'm not saying every teacher's like this, but we are breeding teachers like this. And there are tons of teachers in the schools that are just like this. We have lots of examples of them. They are unhinged. They're out of their minds. They are part of the radical left. They don't even know it. They are propagandized. They're little walking, automated voices of screaming and irrationality. And they're teaching your children. And by the way, right now they're not teaching your children. For the most part, in some of these states, they're drawing a salary and staying home. I don't understand that. I don't understand that. Teachers' unions are encouraging these lockdowns. And I've said, and will say again, I don't think they should be paid. Maybe they'd feel differently if they were not receiving a salary like these small businesses. Something is like wrong here, and that's why we have to sort this election out. There is so much at stake. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.